Well, it's what I do. It's just what I do. It's the news, according to me. No, I didn't time that quite right. This is it. Hello, good morning. It is Monday morning, top of the week, almost the top of the month. It's the end of the month, almost the top of the next month. It is March 31st, 11:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is, apparently I am in the central time zone at the moment. I am in Chicago, Illinois. Not Illinois. It's Illinois. Illinois would be an apostrophe S. We have, by the way, it's 2025, in case I didn't mention that. I have a lot of things to talk about today, but I don't have any idea what I'm going to talk about. There's just so many things that have been going on, and it's kind of a rehash of the same things that it had. And last Friday, I had a lot of audio played for some reason, listenership was down on Friday. I'm not sure what was going on with that. I know that going into the weekend, Fridays tend to be a little bit of a busy day. I think it's better, and I got my show out there kind of late, so I do apologize for that. And today is the same thing. It's kind of a late day for getting this thing out there. And I'm still working on some live broadcasting things. Now, when I'm on the road like this, it is a little bit trickier to get some live broadcasting stuff going on. And I've got taxes I got to get done here. I've got to get that stuff to the tax guy on the 2nd. So we might be able to file before an extension is needed. But I'm going to be working on that the next couple of days. So I have, tomorrow morning I will be in White Plains. I was supposed to be in Columbia, Missouri this morning. That did not happen. And I'm kind of glad about that, actually. It kind of gave me a chance to get a little caught up on some things, get some rest. Yesterday was a very long day, in spite of the fact that I didn't actually go anywhere. Well, I went someplace, but not. I just spent some time yesterday in Rochester, New York, and there was bad weather all over the place, and it just has kind of messed up my travel plans. This evening I will be heading out to White Plains. I'll be there tomorrow most of the day, and so tomorrow morning, granted that I can get up early enough and get some things done, I will have a show fairly early in the morning. However, it will not be a live broadcast. I don't think. I got to look into this a little bit better about what I can do with OBS on my laptop here, but it's I know it's doable. It's just not as easily doable as, and I can't, it's a little bit tougher to share. I need to bring my other screen. I have this little gizmo I can plug into a computer, or I can plug into, even I can plug it into my iPhone or my laptop. And it's a large screen. It's almost the size of a computer screen. A laptop computer screen, and it provides you with a second screen, which I think I can plug into this particular laptop. I know I can plug it into my other. I bought a cheapy. It's just a Windows based laptop that I purchased a while back. That is just basically for running small machines. Most of my CNC controlled machines. My 3D printers, all that stuff that I've got, or actually, I just have one 3D printer. I'm thinking about getting another one. The purchase price on 3D printers right now has really come down, and some of the quality is incredible. Mostly because of the filaments that are involved. It is really a simple device, but I've got some of that kind of thing. I've got a CNC router. I have a CNC plasma table, cutting torch type deal. And I've got a couple other machines that I've converted over to. CNC, which is my mill. I have a CNC bench mill that I converted over to CNC. In the process of upgrading that to some extent, putting a different motor system on it. And then I've got a, rather than putting just regular, not servo motors, but they're regular, how you say, they're regular, I can't think of the name of them now, but there's an indexed motor that I'm putting on. It's kind of a hybrid. It's not as expensive as a servo motor, but it's basically operates extensively the same as a servo motor because it's an indexed motor. Yeah, can't think of what it is. So then I have I'm switching that over. Then I also have a lathe, a small bench lathe that is probably, I think it's a 19 inch. Maybe it's 20, 22 inch, 23 inch, something like that. And it also has been converted over to a CNC lathe, so I can program it in. So all of that works really well with Windows. The software that I have is basically Windows based, or that's Mach 3. Anyway, onward and upward. This is not a show about CNC equipment. This is a show about what's in my cup. I have a cup. It's a paper cup. I had an experience at Panera Bread this morning. I went over to Panera Bread to get some breakfast. And I don't have, I do have a little bit of chai left. I'm going to save it for tomorrow because tomorrow is more important. I'm holding off. It's called delayed satisfaction or whatever you call it. I don't know, delayed whatever. And so I've got one. I forgot to fill my little jar up with chai that I use, my travel jar that I usually have. So I only had two, basically, well, really only one cup, one big cup, but I had basically the enough mix for two small cups of chai. Of course, I can just use a little more creamer in it, but it's I didn't have it filled up. And so yesterday I used half of the two small cups, basically, is what I had enough for. So I used half of it yesterday. I'll use half of it, the rest of it tomorrow morning to finish off with my chai. I just Starbucks is all around me all the time, and I just don't like going to Starbucks. It just doesn't have the same flavor. But in my main cup today, this is what the subject of today's show is, what's in my cup, and it's what I have in my cup today is hot tea. It's basically breakfast, English breakfast, whatever it is. Just a black tea with quite a bit of, but it's a very large cup. It's twice the size of a normal. It's probably like a venti. For those of you who are in that snooty world, I have it's a longer, taller venti, and it's a large cup with tea in it. And I probably put about three or four heaping teaspoons of sugar in there. And it was in packets, so I don't know, six packets. I don't know that's what that is. It's like six teaspoons probably. Regular teaspoons, but then I did put some honey in there, which is kind of sweetens it up a little bit, just enough, and it just makes it just drinkable. Plus, the honey is very good for your throat. It's very good for it's very good for you in general, but it's also very good for your throat and for oral health. So I have some honey in there. Everything's in moderation. So that's what I have as my main cup. My backup cup is just a bottle of water. However, it's not the best water in the world. I think a lot of times what I do is I get a bottle of water. I get two different sizes. I usually get a big, large bottle, and I have a smaller bottle that I kind of keep in my travel bag, in my bag that I keep with me all the time. And that smaller bottle, I usually just fill that up when I go to a gym or something at a hotel. They usually have bottled water there, or distributed water, filtered water of some kind, typically. Last place I filled this up, apparently it did not have that great of water. And I thought it was someplace out in the middle of nowhere that I thought they would have pretty good water there, but they did not. It has a strange taste to it. I don't know what's going on with that. It's not bad. I can drink it. But I also have, because of that, I have a backup to my backup. And my backup is this can of Arizona iced tea. That has lemon flavor in it. I'm not a big fan of that. It is kind of refreshing, but I'm just not a big fan of that. It has to be pretty hot outside. Now, this morning I woke up, it was 65 degrees outside. I thought I was going to have to wear a coat, and I didn't have to wear a coat. Today I went outside, and it was 34 degrees. Welcome to the Midwest. So I had this out in my car, and I went out and got this out of my car. So but it has to be really hot outside, and I have to use plenty of ice to typically drink an Arizona iced tea with lemon. I don't like lemon in my tea to begin with, but it's just one of those things. So I have a backup to my backup, and then I also have a backup to that and backup. I got a bigger bottle of water. I'm pretty much swimming in a sea of liquid here. So that's the show. Now, onward and upward, let's talk about some things that are happening with the news. It has been an interesting week this past week, and I think that anybody who has their head on straight and can sit back and objectively watch what's happening here We can see very clearly. I didn't talk much about the signal case, by the way. I did have some audio about that. I had that on my computer at home. I do not have it with me on my laptop, and I really need to start keeping some of these things on a thumb drive. But the interesting thing about some of this stuff is how they're treating the signal. They're calling it signal gate. And they're still going on with this. I was watching a show. There's a guy on the weekends on Fox. He's an older guy, kind of lanky looking, and he has these people on who are, they pretend to be centrist. They pretend to be Fox News regulars. This guy is, he is a snake, in my opinion. He is, I can't think of the guy's name. He's not a very popular guy. How he has a show on Fox is kind of beyond me, because he doesn't really, he has some integrity in the things that he reports on, but his opinions, his punditry is off the charts. And of course, he has these people on. He had one guy on that was from The Hill that I have, who is supposedly the more conservative guy on The Hill on Rising. I think it's called, they have a show on YouTube called Rising, or maybe it's on a regular network. I don't know, but it's on, they post it on YouTube. It's called Rising. And the one guy on there who is supposed to be the right-wing guy, the conservative, I would say is a maybe a centrist moderate who happens to lean right a little bit, who has a little bit of objectivity. But the lady on the left is absolutely leftist. I would say borderline Marxist. Now, the fellow who supposedly is conservative, he was on this panel. He's on this guy's show, and there was another lady that was on there as well. I don't know what her name was. So there was three of them on there, and they were bantering back and forth some of the issues with the Signalgate thing and some of the stuff that was going on. Some of the things about Doge, some things like that. There was bantering around all the things that were kind of in the news. And if you know where this guy's coming from, now, and where this guy really exposed himself in a political sense, those of you who are, mind went somewhere else. What he's really about, he actually is a very anti-Trumper, the guy who is the moderator of the show. He exposed this back during the time that the election, it was before January 6th, actually, but it was actually, especially after January 6th, he really, it was actually right after the election in November of 2020, that he kind of showed what his true colors are with regard to Trump. He just obviously didn't like the guy. He was glad he was out, and that hasn't changed as far as I've seen. Now, he has moderated a little bit more towards the kind of the center, but he still has no objection. There's, you know, you can get what's called chronic Trump derangement syndrome, and then you can get like stage five Trump derangement syndrome. And I think 30% of the Democrats, the Democrat Party, has severe TDS. And then there's a group, and of course, they eat their own. They don't care. This Chuck Schumer, by the way, like, for instance, Chuck Schumer had a book tour. He was supposed to go on a book tour. This whole thing with the budget came up and some other things. He canceled his book tour, not because of Republicans harassing him. It was because of Democrats harassing and protesting him everywhere he was going. That's not a very good look when your own party is out there chanting against you. And that's worse than having the other side. When you have the opposition being the Republicans, and they're out there chanting, and which you hardly ever see that. The Republicans just don't do that. They're not mobilized that way. They don't think that way. They basically want to be left alone. Most conservative, right-leaning Republicans, most of them, and even libertarians, just want to be left alone. They don't want to have to get out and protest something and do all this stuff. In fact, most of the people on the left don't want to do that. Get out and have rallies. And have a rally. Explain to me the value in that. When you get out and do that, it has nothing but optic positivity. In other words, when when the left gets out there and they organize a rally and they have all these people show up and they bus people in and they pay all this money to they pay people to be there, by the way. You get out and start asking them questions. And I've got some audio I'm saving up for the end of the week here that probably going to be on, hopefully on Thursday. I have kind of a busy day. Thursday, Friday is going to be a very busy day for me. But I have in the morning on Thursday, I have some time. I hope to be able to pull all this together. But they're interviewing some of the people who are out there doing these protests. And they're asking them pointed questions, specific questions about Elon Musk and why they hate him and things about that are going on with Doge and president and everything else. The very same things that they were saying about Donald Trump are the same things they're saying now about Elon Musk. And what's fascinating to me about this is that they can't define anything. And they just throw out the talking points, throw out the narrative, and that's all you're going to hear. And there's never any defining details about anything that they believe. It's just all whatever it is. So these people get out there and they do all these protests. And my question to you is, what has changed? What have you changed? What effect are you having? Well, it's building awareness. No, it's not. It's building. The only thing it builds awareness to is the fact that you're crazy. You're driving a wedge, and you're being used by the left for optics. And what I mean by that is it provides them with a soundbite on the news to show that, look, everyone's up in the streets, they're up in arms, and this is what's happening. And they love to push this stuff overseas. You go to the overseas market, when you go over to Europe, when you go over to the BBC, anything. Now, Sky News Australia, very different story there. Sky News in Europe, which is where the BBC is, where it's actually comes from, it's a very different story there. They're very left-leaning, socialistic, I would say communist leaning. And that's what they're all about. They provide, they're even further removed. And so all the people there get is basically the information they're getting from the news there, which is what, AP puts out, which is AP is kind of this clearinghouse of all this information that basically independent reporters put on, and they screen what people post there. They post it, then they just pick up whatever they want to pick up. The people who are doing the broadcasting, it's a conglomeration. It's a kind of an association. So Associated Press is what it means. It's just a all the different press networks, whether you're small, large, whatever you are, you post things on the AP conglomerate, and then people can pull things off of that, whatever they want. It's a kind of a clearinghouse of news information and video and stories. And that's what the AP is. That's actually pretty good tea, I have to say. So that's how they work all this stuff out. So this whole thing of having people in the streets protesting and doing all this stuff is all about optics. The George Floyd riots, for example, did not change anything other than they started defunding police all over the place and having more problems. And then having to refund the police, and now they're having a hard time, because of all that, they're having a hard time recruiting police officers. Now, so it's exacerbated a bigger problem. By and large, most police officers are not, criminal thugs that are trying to crack down. Most of them are not. Now, I have to say, that stuff trickles down from the top, first of all. There's always been bad cops. There's always been cops who have, the authority goes to their head. That has always been the case since the 1940s. And as far as I know, since man has been alive, and any authority you give to people, there's always somebody that takes it too far and takes advantage and goes crazy with it. There's always going to be that guy out there. And unfortunately, you take away, you criminalize all of them, or you vilify all of them because of the acts of a few bad apples. And that's basically what has happened. In the Eric Chauvin case, they're basically now trying to get him, there is a movement now to get him acquitted. Of course, giving him an acquittal will not actually get him out of jail unless the governor acquits him in the state of Minnesota, because the case basically was against him was state law was broken. In other words, there were some civil rights laws that were broken federally. He could be acquitted of that or commuted, have his sentence commuted. But it was not the case with the state. The President Trump can't do anything about the state laws, the state convictions. So it's not going to happen. Of course, now there are people out there for some reason. The Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro was out there making this case for getting Chauvin acquitted. All of a sudden, just out of the blue, and just kind of a weird deal. Very much a strange thing for him to pick up and start pushing on. The only reason he was doing that was because he was trying to get something. He had to get a story with some momentum that didn't have something to do with the Daily Wire. Problem was the Daily Wire was in the news. It was they were in the news because of all the things that were happening with them with the Brett what's her name show and the issue with Candace Owens and some of the other stuff that was going on there. Of course, there was the David Crowder thing that happened a couple of years ago, and just the whole thing. They've just had a bad reputation. Now, of course, Jeremy Boren has now resigned, stepped down as a CEO. I'm not sure if he's resigned from the company completely. This is happening in a lot of different organizations, a lot of punditry organizations. The Young Turks, for example, Cenk Uygur, he's the one who runs the show over there. He just recently basically fired one of their content creators on their show that I can't tell whether she was, I think she was part-time. They wanted her to go full-time. She didn't want to do that. She wanted to do that, but didn't want to do that. Now she's complaining that she didn't get to do that, or she didn't have the opportunity to do that, even though they offered her an opportunity to do that. She admitted to the offer an opportunity. She didn't. It's just so much drama going on there. She is basically a left-wing, total radical Marxist. Of course, Cenk has kind of softened up towards the Republican Party now, realizing that because the carpet's been pulled away here, and you can see all the rats running around. It's kind of one of those things where you have, Cenk is actually kind of concerned because he's realizing the Democrat Party is not what he thought it was. I don't think anything fundamentally has changed in Cenk's basic philosophy of society. This is where people fall into a trap. They think, and I even with regard to Tulsi Gabbard, I appreciate the fact that she became an independent first. She left the Democrat Party first. She didn't just jump from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party. She left the Democrat Party. In the process of all that, in much deliberation, I think she decided to become, later on, it was almost a year later, 6 months later at least, she decided to become a Republican. It wasn't something where she, and I'm not just sticking up for the Republicans here, because they're believing that among the, and I think her problem was the establishment and what she saw. Now, I think what she sees the Republican Party becoming, and if the establishment continues to dwindle away and go away with the likes of Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. Now, why, speaking of Lindsey Graham, why did Trump endorse Lindsey Graham? It seems kind of strange to me. He is not popular at all among MAGA people, among his base. He has done things like this in the past. There's something he's seeing here that we are not privy to, and I don't know what it is. I don't like it. But I have to say there's something else going on here, because it's not like Trump to do that. Lindsey somehow has his fingers on something that Trump needs Lindsey there for, and I don't know what that is. But Trump has been bamboozled by people before. I don't think Lindsey Graham is bamboozled. He introduced Lindsey Graham. I should say Lindsey Graham introduced him. What was it? Maybe Trump introduced Lindsey Graham at one of his rallies in South Carolina or wherever it was. And the whole crowd booed him. They booed Lindsey Graham. So Trump knows. He's fully aware that people don't like this guy, especially his base. People who show up for his rallies, they don't like that. Personally, I think he's a weasel. I think he has been involved in some things that I think are pretty disgusting, and I think he's a pervert. But it's... he doesn't care about the Republican Party. He doesn't care about anything but war and money. And he's just the epitome of an establishment person. Along with Mitch McConnell's the same way. Every day, Mitch McConnell is declining, and they're basically just hauling the guy. There was a guy who stood outside the White House when they're, I think they were, or the Capitol building, and of course they were starting a new session of Congress. And it was basically just videotaping everybody who was coming in, how they were getting there, they're coming in the cars. He had some kind of access to the area where they come in and they get out of their cars and they go into the building. It looked like geriatric time at, if you've ever been to Florida, for those of you, my friends here in Florida who listen to in Florida, you have to admit, there's places in Florida you can go. Ocala used to be really bad. I think it's probably worse now. Of course, the Village is not too far from there. But there, then you have the area where, like Venice, down in that area, anywhere from Sarasota down towards St. or Fort Myers. That whole area, you can find pockets where there's just nothing, but it's just a retirement community. And everybody, you can go to a restaurant. Of course, you go to the early bird restaurant times, which is like 4 o'clock or whatever it is. You'll go in early for the early time when the specials are on. It's cheaper. So all the old people show up, and I know because that's when I go. And you walk in there, and everybody coming in the door has a walker and or they're on oxygen. They're wheeling them in. And this is in every restaurant that you go into. It's that way. This is kind of the way it is at Congress. It's other than the AOCs and some of the other younger bunches that are out there. It's gotten kind of crazy. Now, those folks have to go, and I think that within the next couple of years you're going to see that they're going to start retiring and leaving. Stepping down, whatever they're going to be doing. Nancy Pelosi's the Chuck Schumer's, all these people that are in that tank, basically. Chuck Schumer still gets around pretty good. You have people like Jerry Nadler and those kinds of folks that are, I don't know how they even live through the day. They look so unhealthy to me. Of course, this just tells you something about the access to healthcare that they have, apparently, and they're able to keep themselves functioning. But what keeps them going, what keeps them motivated to stay in office, is the simply the power and the money that's being flowed around them, and they're awash in this. They can, anybody who's around them and who has access to them, who kisses their ring, will be set up with all this money. Now we're finding out where all this money's going. All this money flows into organizations and places where they just blow it on all kinds of crazy things. Elon Musk did a survey over the weekend, or he talked about a survey over the weekend when he was interviewed by Bret Baier. It was a very good interview, and he was interviewed, and then he had his team there. And I think this sheds a totally different light on what the media has been portraying and what the narrative that they've been trying to establish and what is actually happening. Two very different things. First of all, the media has continued to portray that this group of his techno wizards who are helping him go through the people who are on staff to go through the Doge thing and analyze all the spending and the fraud has basically been shown to be they got these 19-year-old kids. There was one of them who was very young. Everybody else was in their late 20s, early 30s, at least. A couple of them are in their 40s, and they're just they're geniuses at what they do. Of course, these are the same people he's only 19 years old. They're the same people who would laud, if that person was on the left, someone like Harry Sisson, they would laud that person and give them all kinds of money for their organization and pay them to do whatever they're doing because that's young, that's the future of the party. That's what they think. Now, these folks are stepping in there thinking that they're doing the country a favor by getting rid of fraud and waste, which means we will have more money. The burden on the taxpayer will be less, and we'll have more money to go into programs that actually matter. And even within the programs that they're finding fraud in, if you have 10%, if you have a billion-dollar agency, And 10% of that is being wasted in fraud. That's, you know, typically 10% is makes or breaks a company. It's typically in that realm. If you took 10% of the profit away from any particular company out there, most of them would fail, because that's how slim the profit margins are, and that's how tight the budgets typically are for anything like growth. Typically, they will decline and die, or they will just die altogether. Take 10% of their market away, or their finances away. If you're finding 10%, and he's finding much more than that. They're finding, like this USAID thing, it was about 80% inefficient and fraudulent. Only about 15 to 20% of it could arguably be beneficial. About 10% of it, probably pretty sure you could consider it beneficial. Now, here's the problem. And I've always said this. And I actually heard, who was it that said this the other day? It was actually I think I actually might have recorded it. And it was might have been Brandon Tatum or somebody like that, was saying how, he said exactly what I've always said, that it's the church's responsibility. The government, they're supposed to govern, they're supposed to manage, you know, public services. They're not supposed to be the safety net of the community. That's the church's job. Now, the government can provide certain services and things to help with that. I have no problem with that to some extent. But when you're offering people money and you're offering them free housing or subsidized housing, and then you wonder why there's an affordable housing problem. Well, you're artificially subsidizing the housing. You're artificially increasing access to housing at the same time decreasing the amount of housing available, and of course that's going to cause housing prices, rent to go up, because subsidized rent, of course, the rent, you know, and of course then if you have rules against the owners, the landlords themselves that are ridiculous, they have to raise their prices to cover and protect themselves. If you look into the rental rules, the landlord rules and rental rights of people in Michigan, the state of Michigan, for example. Look at how difficult it is to get someone evicted from a house. You're renting a house. They're not making payments. They're not renting. They're not paying rent. See how long it takes to get them out of there. What that does to you as a landlord, as an owner of that house. When you buy a house, you fix it up, and you got it all, you know, you're taking care of it, and you rent it out to someone, trying to make it affordable, trying to make the rent low, and then all of a sudden you find out that, you know, you're making payment, you might be, you know, you have a loan on the house or whatever you got, and a lot of people do this. They'll go out and finance a house like that. They'll get a second mortgage on their main house, go out and buy another house to get a rental property, so that they're making an investment, right? And you go out there, and this person rents their house, and they find a renter, and they pay their deposit, and they do all their stuff, and then the next thing you know, they're not making any payments. And of course, they have all these excuses. Well, my mom's in the hospital, and this and that. I lost my job. And okay, well, you got to pay your rent, because, you know, that's just the way it works. You know, you got to pay your rent. Now, you walk into Walmart, you can't just walk out and say, well, my mom's in the hospital, and I lost my job, so you got to give me this. No, it doesn't work that way. But the rules in Michigan are, I think it's up 90 days, I think they can stay in your house. You have to give them a 90-day notice. They can not pay for 90 days and then just walk off. And good luck getting any money out of them. And by the time you pay for court fees, court costs, all the kind of stuff, go after them, you probably still won't get anything because they followed the rules. They waited 90 days and they left. It's crazy. It's insanity, in my opinion. So then you got to make enough money during the time that they are renting that you can pay for those things when they're not. Because you can't rent it to somebody else because somebody's in there. You got these crazy squatters' rights rules in some states and some municipalities. Or if a building is empty, squatters can just come in and take over. And they can literally take your property away from you. And you can't evict them. You can't get them out. You can be the owner of the property, and because they squatted in there, now they have the right to be there because they squatted, because you weren't using it. Crazy stuff. There was an individual who was posting on TikTok about it. making this deal where he was speaking in Spanish. He was thinking he was Spanish or Portuguese, and he was talking about how he was some kind of a gang leader. And he was talking about how he started a business. He was telling people all over the world. He's basically telling, "Come here, and we'll get you fixed up with a house." He goes, "We're coming in, squatting all these houses, and getting everything." Well, apparently, he was flying somewhere, and he caused a ruckus on a plane somewhere, and they had deported him back to Venezuela or wherever it was he was from. And so he's gone. He's gone. But just the fact that he was doing, I'm sure he's probably still running his organization. Probably still has people doing his bidding. But of course, he'll probably end up, being gone from that, being offed, being unalived by someone who wants to take over that whole thing. So crazy stuff happening, just crazy things in the world. And I think that as we go through this week, I'm going to be compiling a few more things and kind of showing some things that have happened in the last week or two. But it's a time for prayer. And I guess that's where we end up ending up in this whole situation is, how do we get through all this? How do we manage this? It is a time for the churches to step up, the real churches. Now, I'm talking about not just social justice warriors behind the pulpit. I'm talking about people who actually believe that God is the reason that we are here. It's easy, the purpose for our existence. We have an obligation and a responsibility to our fellow man and woman. And how we treat each other and how we work through society and work together to fix the problems that we have and to help each other to be our brother's keeper, so to speak. And even in the midst of all of our mistakes and everything else that we do, we still have to try to mumble through this together. And if one falls, we all fall together. We need to be willing to be able to get our hands dirty and help each other. So that's where we're at, folks. In the meantime, I will be back on here tomorrow morning. I just want to say God bless. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week. Hope your week goes wonderfully. Take care, and I will talk to you, hopefully, tomorrow. So, see ya.